All right, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It is the podcast about death and decomposition. My name is Dorian, and I'm Max. Dorian, I heard you got back from parasailing recently. How was that?
Oh, it was a pretty good time. I had a good time dangling 300 feet above the ocean.
Cool, man. That's cool. I'm happy about that.
It's hard, isn't it? It's carrying difficult. The weight of the entire podcast on your shoulders.
The weight of personality.
I do want to commend you, though. You did accurately forget to mention that we are an award-winning podcast, which is totally on brand for
me. I said that.
No, you didn't say award-winning.
God damn it.
To the Pre-Dead Boys. It is the award-winning podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me on this Zoom call here is Max. How you doing, Max?
Doing pretty good. I'm in a little fort I've built right now to block out the sound of my air conditioner. And I just felt the floor shake a little bit, like someone has closed the door. And am now thinking about, like, you know, if someone walks in and they're robbing my house right now, I'm toast.
Yeah, you're in a very vulnerable position.
Yeah. Sitting on my bedroom floor, headphones on, surrounded by a blanket.
If you need to go quiet and not say anything and just be very still, maybe they'll see the blanket and they'll just assume it's like a stack of boxes underneath the blanket and not a human being, and they won't mess with you. So we'll try to shoot for that. Like, if you need to, just go quiet, and then I'll know.
Why does my floor keep shaking like my front door is opening? It's very weird.
It's probably a burglar. Anyway, I did want to get to some very important news. You know, I don't think it's any secret that you and I are not exactly gigantic fans of celebrating America and everything that it stands for. So recently having the 4th of July, you know, like I know I spent some of that time with friends doing fun stuff. I'm not sure what you did, but
managed my dog's anxiety.
Yeah. Poor Julep did not have a good time. So you and I are not necessarily like big fans of the day in and of itself and everything that it represents. But I did want to take this time to, you know, focus on the positive and focus on some real heroes and talk about our boy Joey Chestnut dominating the brand new world record. 75 hot dogs.
It's too many.
75 hot dogs this man guzzled down in how much time was it?
10 minutes, I believe.
Yes, 10 minutes. Confirmed by ESPN. Amazing. Can we give like a quick little like round of applause for this dominant champion? He's the GOAT. The greatest of all time in any sport.
I saw him get upset by Matt Megatoad Stoney.
Megatoad?
And then reclaim his title. Yeah. The first year I went to the hot dog eating contest, Joey Chestnut lost. And it was, people were stunned. It's kind of wild.
It just goes to show that, you know, when adversity comes your way, sometimes if you have an indomitable spirit and the resources at your disposal to succeed, that you can overcome, like Joey Chestnut did. He's the only American hero I recognize this 4th of July.
Yeah. Speaking of hot dogs, a little hot dog over here.
Aw, Julep.
Hope she's not going to make too much noise.
I hope so, too. She's being very good right now, so maybe we should count our blessings here and go ahead and record a podcast before she gets too sweaty. So you have not just prepared a topic for us to discuss today, but it appears here like we are, for the first time in pre-Dead Boys history, going to revisit a topic from a previous episode.
Did we do an episode on animals?
Yeah, episode 22.
Fuck, remember me, dude. What did we talk about?
The helicopter drone cat?
Oh, yeah, okay.
And we talked a little bit about taxidermy and some other stuff. It was great.
Oh, I'll be damned, huh?
Yeah, episode 22, so make sure you listen to that if you want some animal stories beyond the ones we share today.
Okay, interesting.
you totally forgot.
That's okay. How much I dive back into the archives.
Hey, we've generated, up to this point, 55 episodes of, or no, 56 episodes of content. So we're definitely getting to the point. And like, as we continue to create episodes, and as we get older and our memories and brains fail us.
Yep.
I'm just going to say it's a success if we make a podcast that has anything different in it from that previous episode. You know, maybe it's time to pack it in if you accidentally just like recycle all the material from one episode into a new one, and then we're like, well, time to die now.
Oh boy, yeah, I don't think we're gonna repeat anything on this one. I guess last week I can hear those little birds chirping.
Hey!
Now they stopped.
Hey!
I fucking hate animals, dude. Anyway, what were you talking about?
Oh boy.
I'm kidding.
That's good. So we are talking about animals today. I don't have a clever intro besides, I just forgot we already did animals.
That's okay.
As I was putting this together, though, I was thinking about how it's like totally normal for kids to have a favorite animal, but we don't really talk about that as adults.
Hmm.
So what's your favorite animal?
It changes pretty much every time I am exposed to an animal. That is my new favorite animal. I don't know, just off the top of the dome right now, I'm thinking a lot about otters. Because in Animal Crossing, there's a new character, Pascal. He's an otter who, like, anytime you go looking for sea critters and you find a scallop, he's like, hey, can I have that? And if you give it to him, he gives you something in return. And then he swims away, leaning on his back with his scallop on his tummy. It's very adorable.
That's fun.
Yeah, so otters are great. It is no secret to anybody who has listened to this podcast in the past that I am a big fan of dogs.
That's true.
I also like bugs. Like last night, I was hanging out with my girlfriend. We found this beetle that was about like 3 inches long chilling on the porch.
Hell yeah.
That was pretty cool. I just love animals, dude. I think that it's really cool that we share this planet with so many, just such a wide range of different creatures. I just don't fuck with like mosquitoes, leeches, anything that wants to get inside of me and drink my blood. I'm not a fan of them.
That's not good.
What about you? Do you have a favorite animal?
A lot of the times I think I default to like, you know, I like bugs a lot too. Do you know about the Bintu Wrong?
The Bintu Wrong? No.
Yeah. Have I mentioned this? They have them at the Columbus Zoo. Can you Google it really quick? Bintu Wrong. They are ugly.
Oh, why are they all making sad faces?
They all kind of look like they got hit by cars.
Bubs.
But they're like 3 feet long and like jet black and kind of look like kids' drawings. But they're very smart. And you know how when you go into a Target and you pass the food court and it kind of smells like popcorn? Mm-hmm. In a weird way. That's what
kind
they smell
greasy.
Like.
Oh, okay.
It's super weird, but next time you go to the zoo and you go into the Australia exhibit, it smells like a Target food court, and these little guys are why.
Okay, I will keep keep an eye out for that. I will keep my nose peeled.
Yep.
Also, I'm looking at a lot of photos of them sleeping on tree branches, and it is very cute. They just kind of like completely flop over and sort of balance, dangle on the branch. Very frequently with their tongue sticking out, which is extra cute. Thank you for sharing this treasure, this kind of sad but absolutely adorable looking animal.
They're very cute.
Oh, and I think the babies.
Like every office icebreaker should just be like favorite sandwich or favorite animal from here on out. It's like good. You get to learn things.
Yeah.
See cute animals.
I concur.
It's good. So now that we've burned enough time, you want to get into it?
Let's get into it.
All right. Time for the second official animals pre-Dead Boys crack into the topic moment. Brought to you on my end by La Kroger.
I'm digging into polar cranberry lime.
Ooh.
Let's get it.
It's good.
Mmm.
I just got that lemon lime. I like the lemon lime.
That's a very good flavor choice on a day like today. A humid Ohio day.
So, last time we talked about animals, we talked about, like, that cat that got taxidermied and turned into a helicopter. This is going to start off on a bit more of a bummer foot, but I promise that it's going to get better.
Okay.
I want to start this episode by talking about grief. And grief isn't something we talk about a lot on this show. You know, we talk about death a lot, but we have kind of made death totally separate from grief. And a lot of that is because of our own rituals. Like, because humans have the ability to think about religion and an afterlife and stuff like that, we ritualize death. And those death rituals help us cope and reshape our grief. So, like, if you are a person who believes in an afterlife, for instance, your grief when someone dies is tempered by the fact that there's hope for a future reunion with that person. And you can kind of deal with your grief by, you know, believing that the physical death on Earth isn't the end of that person's soul. And, you know, we can have, death ritualization can also become performative in some ways. I know we've talked about funerals in the past, especially funerals in China, where people will hire professional mourners to come. I think Jewish families do this as well. There are professional mourners who come and wail to express grief. We, as humans, have also separated grief and death with the death industry. Like, when someone dies, the closer you were to someone, usually the more responsibilities you have after they die. Especially if someone's death was really sudden, your ability to grieve is going to be interrupted by having to, like, very quickly figure out funeral arrangements and, like, legal stuff with the will. Like, when I worked at the library, it happened pretty regularly, but there would be people who would come in and they would need help scanning and emailing stuff to a funeral home or something. And usually it was, like, older folks because they don't understand scanning and our machine was really complicated. But we would have people who would come in and be like, hey, my husband died 2 days ago and the funeral home and the hospital need me to send the stuff over. And then I have a meeting with a lawyer.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God.
That's a lot. It's a lot to handle.
So I was thinking a lot about how, like, our cultural practices and, like, the rules of the modern world can prevent us from grieving fully. Like, when you have multiple meetings with funeral directors and you have to organize a wake by the end of the week. I think that's one of the reasons that we advocate for our listeners to be vocal with their families about what you want when you die, so that you avoid a lot of that hassle.
Yeah.
But back to grief. just like old timey people, animals are stupid because they haven't invented wills. They don't know about like the funeral industry. They haven't invented embalming. They can't work as funeral directors because they don't understand like formaldehyde because they're like, dumb.
Like Google is free for everyone. Have they not got the memo? I mean, get it together, animals.
Google doesn't care. Sometimes I think about that. Like when my dog sits down and I give her a treat, I'm like, fucking sit down for 12 hours a day and no one gives me anything.
Nobody says good boy to me when I don't pee on the carpet.
And it only happens sometimes.
Like, you're welcome, right? You know?
We've had to do this thing. Julep has started peeing on the bed a lot lately, which sucks because we have like a top load washer, so I can't wash the comforter at mine and I have to go to my parents' place. So now every time we take Julep outside and she pees outside, we're like, good girl, good girl, trying to encourage peeing outside. And I'm like, if I was praised for using the bathroom where I was supposed to,
life would be a lot easier, right?
It would be much nicer.
Yeah.
I don't know. So because animals don't have all the trappings of modern human life, animals grieve both in very similar ways to people and in very different ways. So we're going to get the bummer stuff out of the way first with this episode, like I mentioned. And I figured we would start at like the very, very, very bottom. And I promise it's not just going to be like dead animals the whole time. But what I'm going to have you do now is read some of the real bummer stuff so that I don't have to.
All right, let's get the bummer stuff out of the way. While people have studied animal behavior for centuries, it wasn't until the late 1800s that the idea of researching complex behaviors, such as grief, emerged. The study emerged after Arthur E. Brown published an article titled Grief in the Chimpanzee in Volume 13 of The American Naturalist. The article states, quote, "Some months ago, I called attention in the notes of The Naturalist to several evidences of a higher degree of mental power on the part of the chimpanzee. One of the pair, which at the time was in the Philadelphia Zoological Garden, has since died, and the behavior of the surviving one on that occasion appears to me to bear somewhat on the acquired nature of the physical means by which our strongly excited emotions find relief, as well as on the origin of those emotions themselves. With the chimpanzee, the evidences of a certain degree of genuine grief were well marked. Two animals had lived together for many months. After the death of the female, which took place early in the morning, the remaining one made many attempts to rouse her, and when he found this to be impossible, his rage and grief were painful to witness. The ordinary yell of rage which he set up at first finally changed to a cry, which the keeper of the animals assures me he had never heard before, and which would be most nearly represented by ha-a-a-a-a, uttered somewhat under the breath, and with a plaintive sound, like a moan. After her body was removed from the cage, he became more quiet, and remained so as long as his keeper was with him. But catching the sight of the body once when the door was opened, and again when it was carried past the front of the cage, he became violent, and cried for the rest of the day. The day following, he sat still most of the time and moaned continuously. This gradually passed away, however, and from that time he has only manifested a sense of a change in his surroundings by a more devoted attachment to his keeper and a longer fit of anger when he leaves him."
So that's bummer one.
Okay.
This article from 1879 was what really kicked off the increased study of more complex emotions in animals. Like whenever people research like, oh, crows are using tools or whatever, this is kind of the grandfather of all that. And from what it sounds like, this chimpanzee was grieving you know, he is uttering that ha 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 ha. It's written out phonetically in the article, which is kind of bonkers.
Yeah, we probably aren't doing it justice, but I'm not going to try to accurately recreate someone's grieving sounds.
It felt very strange seeing that like written out. I was like, that's very weird.
Yeah,
that he did that.
Well, you know, it's for scientific study, so it makes sense.
But you know, this, it sounds very similar to kind of how a human would grieve. Like, there's direct sorrow and then kind of a change in behavior. The chimpanzee got closer to the zookeeper, but it seems very traumatic for this ape.
Yeah, definitely.
I swear there's a point to this, and I'm going to say something about it. So just keep that in the back of your mind, even though it's a very unpleasant thing to keep in your mind.
Okay.
But that kind of started animal grief in the same species. But as we've continued to research grief and sorrow and these emotions in animals, we've discovered that grief in animals isn't just constrained to the same species. Two animals in particular, elephants and dogs, will demonstrate a lot of empathy and will mourn animals of other species as well, which is kind of cool. Like, there was an elephant in Tennessee, I think. When this elephant was like a tiny little elephant, a stray dog got in its preserve, and the elephant and the dog became really good friends. And so there's really cool photos of like this, like, 15-foot tall elephant walking around with this little dog by the side of it.
Very cute.
And at one point the dog had to have surgery, and the elephant like just stood outside of the vet's clinic on the preserve, refusing to move until the dog could come back out, which is very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
But when that dog, unfortunately dogs live less than elephants do, when that dog died, the elephant like carried it around for a while in its trunk, which is very sad.
Mm.
Elephants are kind of like, you know, you've heard about elephant graveyards, right?
No, not really. I don't think.
Have you seen The Lion King?
Yes.
So, like, there's that place where all the hyenas hang out.
Yeah, with all of the bones. I assume elephant bones?
Yeah.
Okay.
That comes from, you know, what's been debunked as a myth, but the belief that elephants will go to a specified spot to die, and that, like, when an elephant gets old, it'll leave the herd and go to the elephant, quote-unquote, graveyard to die of old age. I guess that's not actually what they're doing, but they are an animal that exhibits a lot of mourning behavior. Like, elephants will stand watch over other dead elephants for days without like eating or drinking, which is crazy. But I do want to talk about dogs briefly. Are you familiar with the story of Hachiko?
No.
Okay. Scroll down and you can see Hachiko. Or Hachiko's statue.
What a stoic, amazing dog sculpture. Is that bronze?
It's bronze, yeah.
I love this.
That statue is very old. Helen Keller was at the unveiling of it. And like, there's a cool photo of Helen Keller petting this Hachiko statue.
It's very sweet.
But he is a real tearjerker. But maybe like the best good dog. So can you read Hachiko's story?
Absolutely.
Please? I might tear up.
Hachiko was a Japanese Akita dog born in 1923 at a farm in the Akita Prefecture. In 1924, Hide Saburo Ueno, a professor at Tokyo Imperial University, adopted the dog. Every day after his commute, Ueno would meet Hachiko at the train station. The dog's presence was tolerated, but not exactly welcome. On May 21st, 1925, Ueno suffered a cerebral hemorrhage while teaching and died at work. For the next 9 years, 9 months, and 15 days, Hachiko continued to visit the train station, arriving within minutes of when Ueno's train arrived. Eventually, the station and town noticed Hachiko's devotion and began to feed and care for the dog. When Hachiko died, his body laid in mourning with Ueno's partner and train station staff. He was later cremated, and his ashes were buried alongside Ueno's body in Aoyama Cemetery.
Hachiko's a very good dog.
He's very sweet.
And I love my dog, but there's no way she would do this for me. She recognizes, like, the sound of my car doors locking, which is cute.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think she'd be more mad about her Kong. she'd be more mad when she doesn't get her Kong at night.
Yeah. So maybe Julep won't display the same sort of loyal, stoic tendencies, but, you know, this is something that I love about animals, is that there's, frankly, a lot of times that we can see more humanity come from an animal than we do from some humans.
Mm-hmm.
And just there are admirable qualities and things to aspire to be from certain animals. It's incredible. It's very sweet.
Well, and that's exactly it. Like, Hachiko really embodied some of the ideals of Japanese culture, like fidelity and devotion, things like that. And so this dog was kind of adopted as like a mascot for the town and, you know, really treated super well for, you know, at this point, basically being a stray dog.
Yeah.
Like living 9 years is pretty remarkable, but
yeah,
very sweet.
Hachiko, pre-Dead Boys Hall of Fame hero.
Yeah. We're going to have a couple more dogs inducted too, but I like Hachiko being in there.
He'll be the first one.
So why am I making you talk about this bummer shit?
Yeah, why? Got me all sad and shit. What's the point of this, Max?
It's like, I imagine like if you just found out about this podcast and you're sitting down and you're listening to this episode, you're like, oh, this sucks.
Are these guys always a bummer?
So I think, you know, kind of like you were saying, we can use this behavior in animals to consider that maybe the way humans do things is kind of messed up. Maybe we should allow people to grieve in like profound, deep ways without immediately coming up to them and being like, okay, so you've got a meeting with the funeral director in 2 days. And if they're a jerk, they're going to try and upsell you on a bunch of stuff. And then you've got to find a lawyer to figure out the will. And sorry, your spouse died.
Right. Inundating like, them with a to-do list of all this shit after somebody passes away.
Yeah. Maybe it's not great that we handle death like that, you know?
Yeah.
But animals don't just intersect with people in the area of grief. Animals play a very important part in a lot of human death rituals. So if you think back to our 2018 Valentine's Day episode, our first episode, on sky burials, in that ceremony, the people and the vultures work together. Do you remember what the goal of giving the deceased's body to vultures is?
Was it just to return them back to the environment or something along those lines?
Yeah, exactly. Your whole life, you have been taking from nature and you've been, you know, killing animals to eat them and stuff like that. And it's a symbol of, with your final act on this earth, giving your body back to nature.
Right.
Which is cool, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's great being able to kind of research grief in animals and learn how we can apply it to kind of how we process our own human emotions. But animals can help us out, not just by helping us understand ourselves.
And not just in bummer ways.
Yeah. Yeah, they can do good things too.
Okay.
And there are plenty of, just like Hachiko, good dogs out there that help folks out with, you know, solving crimes.
Oh, you mean like Scruff McGuff?
Is he the cop dog with like the trench coat?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you were saying Scooby. I thought you were saying Scooby-Doo wrong. And then I was like, wait, no, Scruff McDuff? Scruff? What's his name?
Scruff McGuff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652, and help take a bite out of crime. You know, I think that we need to have a critical reappraisal of Scruff McGruff. I'm afraid that he may be complicit in some regrettable police practices. This is kind of a big topic, actually, that, like, you know, maybe we got to skim over it. It's outside of the jurisdiction of what we're trying to cover in this episode, but let us just take a moment to recognize there does need to be a critical reappraisal of Scruff McGuff.
Scruff McGuff.
However, Scooby-Doo, a legend, absolute hero. Definitely a model for not just actual constructive police work in solving crimes, also a model of a great friend and, you know, values community with his buds in the Mystery Machine. I think there's a lot of respectable qualities about Scooby-Doo.
And he eats a lot of people food.
Which he is does. Kind of fun. He does, but he does not skimp out on the Scooby snacks.
It's true.
Are Scooby snacks a drug of some sort? Remains to be seen. We don't have sufficient evidence to determine one way or the other, but definitely worth your consideration.
I wonder if they touch on that in the Scooby-Doo movie, which came out like a month ago.
Yeah, Scoob.
Yeah. Dorian, I saw that movie and I loved it. I thought it was an excellent family feature that just plugging a movie that will never be heard of again.
Organic marketing of the new Scooby-Doo movie in our death podcast.
With like a Rico Nasty song on the soundtrack.
Is there really?
Yeah, it's very weird.
Okay, interesting. I do want to look that up because if it is not clear already, I'm a big sucker for a dog's being cute, and they did a good job of manipulating my emotions with their sort of uncanny depiction of baby Scooby-Doo, puppy Scooby-Doo. So I'm going to watch that at some point. I'll report back and let you know if it's good. Maybe we'll cover it on a bonus episode if they get into, you know, the nuances of death and decomposition in that
like
movie.
It's like the animated Scooby-Doo movies where things were like heavy and scary.
Dude, those were fucking sweet. You talking about like the Streets of Video ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were legit.
Where they were like straight up zombies that had to be exercised.
Yeah. Oh man. I'm going to watch those. I'm going to see if I can find those streaming somewhere, but I'll have to look those up. Anyway, we're going to talk about real good dogs, though, right? That solve real crimes?
Well, Scooby-Doo was solving real property crimes. but other dogs help solve things like murders. We're going to give a quick shout-out to one of our dog listeners, Emmerich, and his handler, Kyla. And Emmerich is a cadaver dog.
He's a good boy.
He's a very pretty, like, German Shepherd, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Kyla, if you're listening to this episode, could you put the listening device close to Emmerich for just a second? Okay, is he there? Emmerich, you're a good boy. Good boy, Emmerich.
That's very good. I hope he's happy.
I hope so, too.
So, the proper name for cadaver dogs, and by proper, I just mean, like, boring and unfun, is HDR, human remains detection dogs. But cadaver HRD? Dogs. Oh, HRD, yeah.
You said HDR.
Okay.
High definition
reality. So the proper name, and by proper, I mean like boring and not fun, is HRD, human remains detection dogs.
Gotcha.
But cadaver dogs sounds way cooler.
It rocks a lot harder, too. It sounds way more metal.
So, more broadly, these dogs are specialized detection dogs. And they are trained to help detect human bodies, especially in missing persons cases. A lot of cases where people go missing in, like, heavily forested areas or industrial areas that have a lot of rubble and just garbage. These dogs get brought in to basically sniff around a bunch and try and find traces of blood, of bone, of flesh, stuff like that. There are about 500 volunteer cadaver dogs that work in the U.S. And a lot of other police departments will have specialized canine units that employ them as well. So there's a lot of these dogs out there. And they go through, like, heavy training. These dogs usually get put in a program as puppies and undergo about 1,000 hours of training. And that doesn't count, like, continuing education. That's just from when they start to when they graduate and can actually start working.
Wow.
Yeah. These programs take up to 2 years to graduate a dog.
And when do you know when they start? Is it, like, when they are still very young puppies, or do they wait until they're a certain age? Or
usually, like, a couple months.
Okay.
Because you want to really build that instinct in them to find things. Like, I thought that they always had to be German Shepherds, because that's what you see. But you can really use any breed as long as you train it properly. Like, beagles are upticking a lot. A lot more people are using beagles as cadaver dogs. But what they need to be trained to do is follow and hunt down a scent and then notify a handler. So I found a Guardian article online that goes through what a day in the life of, like, training these dogs is like. And it's actually really interesting. It's pretty cool. So I'm going to have you read that now.
These are the dogs of the New Jersey Rescue and Recovery Canine Unit. Two of the 11 canines are cadaver dogs. Also known as human remains detection dogs, they have been trained to smell death. Specifically, the dogs are trained to smell decomposition, which means they can locate body parts, tissue, blood, and bone. They can also detect residue scents, meaning they can tell if a body has been in a place even if it's not there anymore. Outside, across the parking lot, is a 240,000 square foot abandoned DuPont laboratory that is used exclusively as a training ground for the Penn Vets canine students. Within, a morbid exercise is taking place. Cadaver scent training. Walking through the heavy double doors, the smell is overpowering. Upstairs, 15-month-old Don is training with his new partner, Paul Bryant. On the command, "Find Fred," Don is off. "Find Fred" is an expression coined by Bryant. He says, quote, "With cadaver work, the family or public is always around. So to be more sensitive, I came up with Find Fred. I thought this was a little more sensitive than Find the Dead Guy."
I think that's very funny.
That's very cute. Find Fred.
Well, like, and that's the thing with these dogs is, like, you know, we're training Julep right now, and we do a lot of work with
her. As a cadaver dog?
basically just to not bark at everything. But, like, when you are working with a dog and it's learning, I thought I was being, like, a huge jerk when I started doing it. Because Julep will, like, do that thing where she pulls her ears all the way back and, like, her tail's not bolt upright and she looks, like, a little scared almost. And I was like, am I being too hard on my dog? Am I being mean to it? But then, like, you think about seeing eye dogs and stuff like that. They don't look happy when they're working, you know, because they're working.
Yeah. Who amongst us is happy the entire time that we are working? even if you have a job that you love, speaking personally as someone with like very developed, advanced resting bitch face, I never look happy even when I am. There's actually, when I worked as a sign painter in a grocery store, I loved that job and I was having a great time with the work itself. Someone at one point was taking photos and they took photos of me working on this really big, fun sign that I was really enjoying and excited to post up. But I just had this fucking scowl while I was painting with a paintbrush. And like, I loved the photo because it showed me doing the sign and like a little bit of the process. It's like a fun behind the scenes, but it was like unusable for me to post anywhere or use as like, you know, a profile picture. Cause I just looked so fucking mean. So it makes sense to me that when dogs are working, just like humans, they're not exactly having like, they're not doing the thing that they want to be doing, which is, you know, run around, play, swim, eat things you're not supposed to eat.
Yeah. I wonder too if these dogs ever have like a bad day at work, like if they're ever supposed to be tracking down a body and then they get a big nose full of like, I would say like poop, but my dog loves that.
Yeah, they might enjoy that.
I don't know. They just get a big nose full of something that's like really stinky, like a skunk or something. And they're like, this sucks.
Yeah. Or maybe they just get an email right when they're about to clock out about five or six other things they got to finish before they're allowed to leave for the day.
Okay, we just had another body show up. You got to go find it. And it's like,
damn it.
I wanted to watch Heroes. So we use dogs in this capacity specifically because they can cover really big areas without getting tired. If you've ever like had a dog that gets a smell from something and is just fixated on that, they will go sniffing for that thing. Hmm. Like if we take Julep on a trail walk, she'll just have her nose to the ground smelling the whole time and seems to be a lot less tired when she gets back than I am. I don't know if that speaks more to me or her, but
different fitness levels. It's okay. Yeah. We're working on it.
They're also very good at fitting into small spaces. So there were a lot of these human detection dogs that were used on September 11th when the Twin Towers fell. There were a lot of people trapped in the rubble of those buildings that, you know, people just couldn't get to. And so they would have these like dogs crawling through and finding people and rescuing people because they can fit in these smaller spaces. It feels like an older, like Sherlock Holmesian way of solving crimes almost. But I like that we still use these dogs and that they're still used to like bring closure to the families of victims of crimes. So I think that along with Hachiko, we should put every cadaver dog into the Hall of Fame.
I do think that like that opens up some difficulties with our Hall of Fame, where if we just include one entire category of bunches of people, it gets a little
that's fair.
We lose something in the process. So I don't think we can induct a group into the Hall of Fame necessarily, unless it's a small group of like, I don't know, like three or five. There's just too many good cadaver dogs. You do get, we need some other endorsement beyond the Hall of Fame then. Just unequivocally, if you're a cadaver dog, if you're listening and you're a cadaver dog, you do great work and we're very proud of you.
Good boy or good girl.
Yes, good pups.
I like that. They're very sweet. I don't know. I thought it was really neat, like kind of learning about animal grief for this and learning about how complex animals are. And I think when you consider too, like working with an animal like a cadaver dog and working this dog to accomplish like a fairly big task that's important, it really kind of lends a lot of credence to how smart animals can be and how, like you said at the top, how lucky we are to be able to share our world with them.
Agreed. Well said. Thanks for putting all of this together, Max.
No problem.
And thank you guys for listening to yet another episode of Pre-Dead Boys. We appreciate having yous. We would love to hear your thoughts. What is your favorite animal? I do think it's kind of fun. Like, here's a question for you. What would be the funniest dog to train as a cadaver dog? What's the funniest dog breed? Like, just off the top of my head, I think Basset Hounds could do a very good job because are hunting hounds, but they're also very comical with stumpy little legs and floppy ears and very sad, droopy faces. Would love to see cadaver dog or otherwise, I would like to see a Basset Hound in action, you know?
Do you know about Clumber Spaniels?
Clumber Spaniels?
Maybe a Clumber Spaniel for me. They're like Basset Hounds, but high.
Yeah, you've told me about them before, I think. Okay, yeah, they've got these, like, they're like very boxy-shaped dogs. They look lower to the ground than they probably are.
Just those bloodshot eyes.
Yeah. This dog looks high as hell.
It's very, I'm going to look at a photo of one.
Well, while you're doing that, reach out to us and tell us what you think the funniest cadaver dog would be. And also just any stories or questions or interesting things you want to share with us. We love hearing from you guys. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PreDeadBoys. Email us, predeadboys@gmail.com. Search Pre-Dead Boys Podcast on Facebook and join our Facebook group. And we also have a Discord, which I love, and it's always popping off. We actually have a separate channel on our Discord for cute animals. So at any point in time when our podcast or life in general gets a little heavy, we deal with some sad, heavy things from time to time. It's good to have a place that you know you can go to at any given time and see, like, some cute bunny photos, some cute, you know, dog sleeping photos, or just dogs being weird, or different animals of all sorts we've got on that channel. If you want to join our Discord, send us a message on any of the platforms I just mentioned, and we'll send you an invite. If you want to support this podcast, there's a few ways to do that. If you want to support us financially, we would love that. You can jump on over to patreon.com/predeadboys and consider signing up for a monthly pledge of $1 or $5. You get some bonus goodies. By the time this episode comes out, I'm going to do another run of wallpapers for desktop and mobile devices. Ooh. And we'll have a bonus episode halfway through the month. Max and I got to talk about that because we haven't fully decided what that's going to be yet, but I will put something together roughly halfway through this month for everybody who supports us at $5 or more. And we got a great episode about A Mortician's Tale and a couple episodes about The Black Parade by My Chemical Romance. If you feel like throwing a little bit of money our way, supporting what we do, if you have the means, we appreciate it. And there's just all kinds of good stuff that you'll get access to when you sign up. So make sure you check out patreon.com/predeadboys. You can also leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. We will read your review right here on an episode, and it helps us out a lot. But above all, the biggest help that you can do is just tell people about this podcast. Share an episode with someone that likes animals or anything that we talk about on this weird-ass podcast. Share it with your friends. We don't advertise. We like to keep it that way, not like, you know, have an uncomfortable, awkward relationship forcing you guys to buy products so that we can continue this podcast. It's just a lot cooler if you tell your friends and your family about this thing that you like, if you like it, and share it with them.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Dorian and Max again. We recorded this episode a while ago, but we wanted to actually drop back in and let you guys know about something really cool that happened to us. A listener of the podcast, Brandy, reached out to us through Instagram and basically just told us that she makes masks, protective masks that are very useful for this pandemic age that we live in. And she sent us a few free masks and a very sweet letter. In return, we just wanted to give her a shout out on the podcast and suggest to you guys, if you are in the market for a mask, which you should be, you should go to Etsy.com/shop/lunarpoison. she mentioned that that's maybe a reference to one of our episodes, although I don't remember talking about lunar poison. It sounds dope.
I believe it was necromancy, but like once we record, I just dump all of this from my brain.
Right.
So sometimes people like mention on the Discord, like, oh, when Max and Dorian said this, and I'm like, oh, right. I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like once it's published, it's out there and I'm like, okay, my brain is empty again. Time to fill it with nonsense. No, but Brandy's masks are really cool. So she sent us these reversible masks. And right now I'm on a Zoom call with Max and just showing him. I haven't delivered his mask to him yet. But she put these in these very sweet personalized bags for us with our names on them.
That's great.
And they are reversible cloth masks. So the ones that we got, on one side there's like skeletons.
Aww,
some of them printed in metallic ink, which is very
shiny
and cool. The other side is even cooler. It's a bunch of gravestones, and some of them say cute things like the name is Just in Pieces or Doug McGrave. And dude, I just found this out. She told me, and I tested it to make sure, and I can confirm that this side is glow-in-the-dark fabric.
No way!
Yeah, it's got little bits that glow in the dark. Isn't that badass?
That's tight, yeah.
Just real quick about these masks, they are super comfortable. I have a big, fat head, and lot of masks don't fit, but Brandy included adjustable straps and like plenty of room to work with on these masks. So they are perfect. They're some of the most comfortable masks that I've ever worn. And I have no hesitation in recommending checking out her Etsy shop and trying to support her. She also sent us a very sweet letter that I wanted to read to you. Are you ready for this, Max?
I am, yeah.
Okay. Dear Max and Dorian, COVID-19 has brought many changes. For me, it was facing my mortality. I used to work on an ambulance when I was fresh out of high school and never knew how to cope with the amount of death I had to deal with. I quit after 2 years. Now, I have begun to face my fears, and the death positive movement has been incredibly helpful and refreshing and fun. While I was off work, I started sewing masks and listening to your show. You two have brought me endless hours of joyful entertainment and many laughs. Thank you for what you do. You guys rock. Yours, Brandy. I can't read her last name very well. But again, yeah, that was just very sweet.
That's super sweet.
The masks are very cool, but like, I don't know, just getting a little note like that was really fucking sweet. And we appreciate you, Brandy. I'm glad that our goofy little show where we talk about weird shit is like, you know, helping you deal with death anxiety and just all the stuff that, you know, we're all kind of in the same boat. We're all dealing with some pretty heavy shit this year. And it was really sweet to read that. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. I was looking around at some of the other masks in her shop too. They're not all death themed. Like there's a couple ones for little kids with like milkshakes on them, which is super cute.
She's got such a good range because there are the very cutesy kid friendly ones, but I was also really partial to one that it was like a bunch of zombie babes, like zombie pinup girls. And the other side was just leopard print. And I was like, shit, that's so cool. So she's got the full range of like horror death themed to like very cute, you know, some really subtle patterns. I think one was like figs and it was just very aesthetically nice.
If every ad we ever get makes me as happy as this one does, with like a super nice mask and a super nice note, I'm going to be really happy. I don't know if I can hawk underwear with the same love that I have for this.
You know what I'm wearing right now, actually? I am wearing legitimately MeUndies, which I did legitimately get a discount on because of a podcast. So nice. MeUndies, if you're listening, we can talk. But until then, the only recommendation we're going to make is Brandy's masks. Again, go to Etsy.com/shop/lunarpoison. LUNARPOISON. Go shop her masks. Go buy her stuff. She does awesome work. Thanks, y'all. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Bratcurse. Check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com. They're also up on Spotify and everywhere you can listen to music and stream it. And that is going to do it for us. Okay, I'm opening up some tabs in my browser here. Let's see. Oh, Jesus. Okay, Scoob is available to stream, but it's starting at $20.
The fuck?
Yeah, that seems a little crazy.
For a stream?
Yeah, because, you know, theaters aren't really exactly open yet, or at least shouldn't be. I definitely don't want to see the CG, like, Scooby-Doo before that, the really weird Uncanny Valley one. I don't want to see that. That's like creepy, but not in a good way.
Oh, yeah, I don't like that.
Let me search Scooby-Doo movies here. Scooby-Doo animated movies. Jesus. There are tons of these.
They got Zac Efron in this movie?
What, in the new one?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
They got Ted Bundy in this one.
If Zac Efron is not playing the criminal that they catch at the end, then I don't want to watch it. Yeah, I don't know. I just found a whole rabbit trail that's going to completely shipwreck any productivity I was going to have today. It's just going to be devoted to looking up animated Scooby-Doo movies. So that's my day. maybe we should cut it off there. I don't know if you're doing anything quite as productive and amazing as that, but...
Sweating is what I will be doing.
Well... hopefully you and Julep can cool off today. Max and Dorian here reminding you, you're gonna rot. Check your email here in a second.
My fucking email here. Doing it on my fucking phone. I got 3 computers open right now.
Oh,
fucking
very
wild.
Connected.
Dude. My balls are just getting blasted with all the Wi-Fi. I'm not gonna be able to.
Swarmed his balls with radioactive technology. That's the weirdest Spider-Man origin story I've ever heard.